Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
My guest today is Charlie Armstrong, the Customs and Border Protection's Chief Information Officer. Charlie, this is a different type of appearance on our program today. We're going to talk about our CIO survey, the one we do every year, and we're going to talk about how CBP's priorities kind of match up with our survey. So welcome to the program.
Thank you, Jason. I appreciate you having us on the air.
So we put out this survey every year, and what we do is we ask CIOs something like 15, 20, 25 questions, and we're going to post the results of that survey on federalnewsradio.com. And the idea behind it is just to kind of get an anonymous survey of CIOs. What's going on? What are their priorities? Cybersecurity is the top one. Roughly 8 out of 10 said it was their top priority. And then when you look at some other ones, moving back office systems to the cloud was important, as was using IT to relieve budget pressures. From CBP's perspective, how do those priorities kind of match up with your priorities?
They align pretty well with what CBP priorities are. Obviously, cybersecurity is a very key component of all of what we're doing. So much of the data that we have is protected under various laws, either Bank Secrecy Act or Trade Secrets Act, or just the general laws around protecting PII. So we take cyber very, very seriously. Moving to the cloud, you know, we've been kind of engaged in that effort for the past couple years. And then, you know, more effective, cost-effective, and efficient IT services that kind of responds to the ever-changing mission demand.
Let's go through each of those just real quick. From a cybersecurity perspective, I know there's always some sensitivities when we talk cyber, but give me a sense of how is cyber changing from your perspective as the CIO to what it was, you know, 3, 5, 7 years ago. And I know the big thing you'll probably mention is the continuous diagnostics and mitigation program, but what else are you guys looking at from a cyber perspective?
Well, and that is the big thing, is the continuous diagnostics and mitigation. You know, it's really trying to stay ahead of those zero-day attacks. We've got a much more robust patching cycle now than what we used to have, much better inventory of what's out there in our enterprise, and making sure that we're capturing metrics on what the state of those platforms are or devices are. New in terms of focus, though, is not just data that's in our internal systems, but also data that may be housed by third-party providers to us. So obviously very focused on making sure that we have the right contract language in place and that we have some methodology for how we're going to hold vendors accountable for maintaining data in their own systems that relates back to CBP.
That's interesting that you bring up third-party data, because that leads us into the discussion around cloud, because I think the two are related when you say some kind of methodology to hold vendors accountable through contract language. Can you talk a little bit about what that means and how do you do that? Because I think that's one area that I think a lot of CIOs, a lot of agencies are struggling with.
There's kind of two paths there, right? So the one is that we can send in our own team to do periodic audits and make sure that the right procedures are being followed, that diagnostic tools are being monitored, that there's a good accounting of either security events and or attempted security events, and also ensuring that data is not kept for periods beyond what the contract calls for. So if data is supposed to be deleted after 5 years, that we go in and ensure that there's data that's not still sitting out there. And so that's one methodology. The other methodology is, as you see on FedRAMP, is to have an independent third party go in and do that kind of audit for us. So I think it really kind of depends on the situation for us. And I would anticipate we'll be using a combination of both some internal organic capability to do those audits and or asking certain vendors to use third-party auditors.
All right, I think that's interesting because, you know, there's a recent report out from a group of IGs, and I don't think DHS was part of that civilian agency IGs that looked at cloud and FedRAMP. So it's interesting you bring that up as a second approach to ensuring security around, for instance, cloud services. Let's talk about cloud for a second, because that's another big priority for CIOs. You know, I know CBP has been jumping into the cloud over the last couple of years, and DHS more broadly has been offering kind of internal cloud services. What is CBP using of those internal ones and even external cloud services?
We've been reworking our architecture and replatforming systems. So we're a heavily mainframe-centric shop, probably 3 or 4 years ago. And since then, we've been working to get out of that architecture and into kind of our common architecture that we will be able to use across all of our platforms, and is our kind of a leapfrog into cloud. So it starts for us on kind of re-architecting our systems to take advantage of cloud. And then from there, we've implemented our own private cloud that we're deploying applications to. And that's very much a combination of an Oracle and open source stack that gives us kind of that high availability, high capacity data processing that we need for our environment. As far as what services that we've started to use from the department, we were one of the leaders in moving to email as a service, and that's worked out quite well for us. We're also looking at some of these other offerings in terms of some of their infrastructure as a service offerings. But right now, we're kind of focused on private cloud.
And when you say private cloud, because I heard a great definition, there's three kinds of cloud. We've talked about no public, private, hybrid. But when you talk about private cloud, is that a government-only cloud? Or is that even a commercially run cloud, but government-only? So Google, HP, Microsoft, Amazon, you can name the vendor, they have clouds that are just for government only, or a little bit of both. Maybe you're doing both internal and that kind of commercial private cloud.
For us right now, that private cloud is government owned. However, your broader definition is where we're headed. So we're not ready to just dive in head first into commercial private cloud or government cloud, but we're trying to dip our toe in and see, get some experience with how does it work? How do you manage it? What skill sets do people have to have? You know, what does your contract need to look like? All those different things so that we ensure that we've got all of the integrity and accountability around our data that we need to have. I think that probably some of our first work in that area will be along the lines of just doing storage as a service in a commercial cloud offering.
It's interesting that you were talking about data and not talking about systems, because one thing you sometimes hear about cloud is that loss of control of systems. And it sounds to me like you're okay with that. You wish you could maybe lose control of some of those systems and just worry about if the data is protected. Am I reading too much into it, or is that really what your focus is the data?
I think that it's both, but I think the data is probably the more important piece to me right now, because the applications piece, operating the applications piece, that's something that you can kind of ebb and flow and work at. But the storage and security and availability around your data, that's a game killer for you. If you don't have that, you know, it can put your agency out of business. So, you know, working the right architecture to make sure that you've got good plumbing going into that private cloud offering is a real key part of it. And I think it's something that we're all still learning.
I think that's exactly right. I mean, when you look at the survey, for instance, in CIOs who talk about data and data protection, it's another area that obviously comes up to quite a bit, is around data and how people are protecting data. From your perspective, is the data and where things reside, because the survey, one of the interesting things about the survey shows that a lot of the CIOs who responded said their apps reside in a government-only commercial cloud, 44%, while a commercial cloud service provider is 36%, and a government-run cloud, it was 20%. So I found it interesting that more people are getting more comfortable with those other parts, but it's that data piece that's so important. What is holding you guys back from moving wholeheartedly into the full commercial cloud, or maybe even the government-only commercial cloud? Is it a security issue, or is there something else?
For right now, it's really this re-architecting that we're doing. So we really need to get our systems, our applications rewritten so that they'll operate in that cloud environment, and we're not there yet. Our goal is to have that pretty well done in the next couple of years. So that won't stop us from moving, but it's certainly slowing us down a little bit. And then, you know, the other thing is we really have been focused on kind of other mission priorities right now, and not to get into the exhaustive list, but I'm sure since you're Fed News Radio, you know all of what we're dealing with here. So trying to make sure that we've got the right applications in place to respond to those ever-evolving needs of our mission has been the top priority.
And without a doubt, I mean, with any CIO's office, you know, what I hear time and again is customer needs, you know, mission needs, programmatic needs always are going to come first. Well, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we can talk a little bit more about the survey and your priorities. You're listening to a special edition of Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. My guest is Charlie Armstrong, the Customs and Border Protection's Chief Information Officer. Welcome back. You're listening to a special edition of Ask the CIO on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. My guest today is Charlie Armstrong, the Customs and Border Protection Chief Information Officer. I'm Jason Miller, your host. Now, Charlie, before break, we're talking a little bit about our CIO survey today, how the results kind of match up with what CBP is doing. And one of the things that we talked about in our survey was the next set of apps that are going to be moved to the cloud. And we gave them, you know, about 10 or 12 different options, anywhere from human resources to financial management to mission critical apps. And what's interesting is it was pretty evenly split between two of the big areas was email and public websites and agency-specific apps and customer service tools. So each of them got in that 40 to 48% range. For CBP, what's next for you guys when it comes to cloud?
Well, our two big systems are our automated commercial environment, and we're recrafting or reworking our old legacy mainframe system into a cloud architecture. But we're also modernizing the processes that go around it. So the how cargo gets cleared, how duties get collected, that's all going through an overhaul and is currently scheduled to be completed by 2016. The second one, and this is the bulk of our data, is our tech system, which houses the data for all of the passenger processing, folks coming across through the ports of entry, airports, land border ports, seaports. All that data gets housed in there, and it's a real quick turnaround in terms of somebody coming across the border and having to give the officer some really quick decision and risk analysis. So that also was a very heavily mainframe-based system, and we're moving that also to the same cloud architecture that we talked about earlier.
Talk a little bit about that moving from a mainframe to a cloud-based architecture, because you seem to be going back to that a lot where, as you said earlier in the program, CBP was a mainframe shop for many, many decades, and now you're trying to get out of that. How difficult is it to make that switch?
It's been extremely difficult because we're trying to modernize the systems while keeping the current systems up and operating. So the ability to do compatibility and ensure that the data is in sync between the two systems has been kind of the hard part in all this. And then also, you know, with pressure on the budgets, just making sure that we've got money to finish these projects up and get them across the finish line. And then finally, all of this requires that you continue to maintain these older systems, and you may have to go back in and rework code in those older systems in order to ensure that the data is in sync or extend the functionality of the new application. And those skill sets of mainframe COBOL programmers, it's just getting less and less in the marketplace. So that's been an issue for us. And then the subject matter experts around the knowledge of how those systems operate, what needs to happen, and when it needs to happen. So those have been kind of the long poles. Believe it or not, just writing the code itself, you know, getting systems out on time, we've had a pretty good track record of that in the past 3 years, largely because we've moved to this agile development process. And so, you know, we're rolling out chunks, you know, in 2-week increments and typically doing a release about every 3 months.
Wow, that's impressive because, I mean, one of the things that you hear time and again is agencies have to move to agile. I know Mark Schwartz, your counterpart in the Citizens and Immigration Service Directorate, has been a big proponent of agile as well. I imagine you guys are working together, at least sharing best practices to some extent.
So Mark has been a leader across the department, and we've worked with Mark quite a bit on how you go about doing agile, what the standards are around it, what the reporting needs to look like. And so he really has helped us out And we've adopted a lot of the CIS policies and practices. And we've also done some tailoring to support the needs within our agency, too. So it's been a good partnership, not just with Mark, but across the department. We've all kind of worked together to learn more, figure out how to get the right skill sets in place, you know, the right training, the right certifications, those kind of things.
Is Agile big in the Homeland Security Department more generally? I mean, you have two big components, CIS and CBP right now, but what about other components? Is this something that you as a CIO counsel within DHS talk about, share best practices? Is it really moving quickly throughout DHS?
It's moving. I can't attest to how quickly it's moving, but it certainly is a topic of conversation at the CIO councils and at the offsites. Mark and CIS clearly are out in front on this. And
when you have a success story like CIS, it definitely can spread more easily because you have that trust, you have that relationship. And I think that's a big help when it comes to Agile, because I think a lot of agencies are looking at Agile going, okay, I know I should do this, but how's the best way to do it?
So the other thing that we've done, Jason, it was we've combined Agile and Kanban, and we've used Kanban to do a lot of our engineering work and a lot of our platform delivery, network delivery, those kind of things. And it's a very similar kind of methodology, comes out of the same roots, but has a kind of a different structure because it's more directed towards kind of a service delivery rather than software development.
You mentioned one other thing about going to Agile and looking at the increments is the idea of how to save money. And that was another top priority for CIOs in our survey. Using IT to become more efficient, more effective. Give me a sense of how that fits into CBP, because it's no CIO will tell me they're not doing that. But how are you guys looking at IT maybe differently than maybe you have in the past to make that efficiency and effectiveness, you know, just that much better?
Well, good or bad, you know, one of the things about declining budget, it kind of is a forcing function, and it helps you kind of break through some barriers that maybe you weren't able to get to before. So one of the things that I'm most proud of is that we've been able to eliminate the paper I-94, which is that form that non-U.S. citizens have to fill out before they come into the country. And eliminating that form and automating a lot of that process has saved us somewhere around $28 million a year, and that's a nice chunk of change. We're continuing that. If you go out to our ports of entry, you're going to see a lot more self-service today. We're encouraging a lot more people to sign up for global enrollment, and that allows them to kind of come through and, you know, go to a kiosk and process themselves. And assuming everything goes okay, they just go right on to get their bag and the exit gate. So those kinds of changes within our environment have been really key in terms of helping make us more efficient. And then also just trying to drive down the cost of the IT delivery service itself by moving to more open standards, open systems, and this cloud technology that we talk about.
Now, when you move to take a paper process like the I-94 that you talked about and move it in online, that comes with its own set of challenges. But obviously the long term is that you'll get better data, you'll be able to process that data more quickly, and then apply analytics to it. How big of a lift is it to take a form that has been, you know, in paper for so long and push that online?
It really wasn't as complex as you might think. The bigger issue, as you said earlier, was the quality of the data got much better, right? So before, we were having all this paper processed, and then we would send it off to have it keyed in. It was so data entry. And anytime you're in dealing in a kind of a data entry environment, you're going to get errors. So I actually feel like the quality of the data has improved tremendously. Plus, there's no time lag anymore. So it used to be that we would send off that data, and it may take, you know, 3 or 4 weeks for them to key it in and it to be uploaded into our system. Now we have that data on arrival. So it's been a real game changer for us.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to follow up on what you just said about the data and better data. Big data analysis was another question we asked our CIOs in our survey. And when we come back, we're going to see how CBP is dealing with the big data problem. You're listening to a special edition of Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My guest is Charlie Armstrong, the Customs and Border Protection Chief Information Officer. Welcome back. You're listening to a special edition of Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My guest is Charlie Armstrong, the Customs and Border Protection Chief Information Officer. Today, we're talking about Federal News Radio's annual CIO survey. Charlie, now, one of the big deals that came out of the survey is the question around big data. And you were just talking a little bit about how moving some paper processes to electronic processes actually making things more effective and efficient, but even better, it's giving you guys better data. And I know we talked about the security of data earlier on and how agencies are just swimming in data. One question we asked is, how is your agency dealing with big data? And about CIOs said they rated it 6.8, so almost 7. 7 out of 10 said using more business intelligence and analytics software was the way they're dealing with it. Right behind that was very close, implementing data standards to better manage information. And then the rest of them were kind of all about the same, with the one behind that moving databases to the cloud. So big data, obviously a challenge for everyone. How is CBP dealing with that big data challenge?
5 years ago, we had about 6 petabytes of data. Now we're at about 17 petabytes of data. And I expect that that number is going to continue to grow at an exponential rate. So the ability to process that data, analyze it, use some business intelligence around it is really crucial to us. I talked a little bit earlier about this change of technology and replatforming of systems. And in that process, we actually, as we modernized the database platforms and how we were structuring the servers together, allowed us to increase our ability to process queries by about 23,000, 24,000%, that's quite a significant increase. So we saw where business intelligence queries that used to run in a week would now run in 3 or 4 seconds. So as you can imagine, from a mission user standpoint, that means they can do a lot more analysis now in a much shorter time frame in terms of trying to figure out where that needle in a haystack is. We've also seen database queries in the past 10 months go from 14 billion a day to 58 billion a day. And, you know, this platform that we've moved to, this cloud technology, has the elasticity and scalability to be able to handle those kinds of increases. And I expect that that's going to continue to grow as we add more and more unstructured data to the network, things like camera data, sensor data, video, streaming video, those kinds of things, that number of 17 petabytes is going to go up exponentially. So being able to bring together both unstructured and structured data, do that business intelligence, and give that end result is really key to our mission.
That's just incredible. You know, 17 petabytes of data, so it's grown roughly by about 11 petabytes over just the last 5 years. And then the number of database queries, 14 billion to 58 billion a day. Now, is that coming just from internal government queries or state and local as well? Or is that all queries that, you know, if you are a shipper and you want to check out the status of your goods that, you know, are coming through the ports, that's another query?
No, that's all of our queries, both internally and externally.
Okay. And as you said, it's only expected to increase. Can you talk a little bit about that move to the cloud? What changed? What did you do that made this work? Is it just using the cloud technology, as you said, the ability to expand when needed? Or was it the tools itself, or a combination that really is making the big difference?
It's a combination. And I will say that, you know, our older architecture, we would be kind of one step behind the next release of the next bigger box to come out. So with the newer cloud technologies, now we're able to just scale that across, you know, the entire enterprise and share those resources. So, you know, if I have an application that maybe is going to be a heavy user during the day, I can take advantage of those extra resources that are out there. And then maybe those quiesce at night, and some other application that runs in the evening will then use that capability. So it's that ability to kind of share resources, move load around, and really scale up has been key. The other big thing in this, and it's getting better as we continue to re-architect, is the amount of downtime we have for maintenance. So we've really cut that window down significantly. I won't quote the numbers because those are kind of sensitive to us, but you know, we're going to get it down to the point where we can do kind of a rolling patching cycle or a rolling maintenance cycle and almost get that downtime to zero.
Now, that would be impressive to get that downtime down to zero. I mean, that's tough. But as you said, you know, as things move around, I imagine there's different databases, different parts of the world query your databases at different parts of our day and night. And if you're able to kind of pattern that, you can adjust your resources accordingly. Is that ability, did that take some time to put together and understand the cycles? Or is that something you guys always knew, but now you finally have the technology to adjust when you need to adjust?
No, I think it's something that we've learned with the evolving technologies. And in some cases, we've actually pushed some of the vendors to move a little bit beyond where they were to help us tackle some of these needs. And we're going to continue to press providers to evolve their technology to help us deal with this ability to keep data available to our frontline officers all the time. And that includes being able to move workload around between data centers real time, that ability to kind of have data anywhere across the network addressable to any application. And so that's the kind of changes that we've been making, not just internally, but also, like you said, with a lot of our other partners that we collaborate with in order to get our mission done. That includes folks like CGIS FBI, includes State Department, Consular Affairs, you know, all those other agencies that we have to share data with real time.
Part of this data and the amount of hits you're getting and queries and the amount of data you're collecting also tags back to another priority, which is around mobile devices. And one of the questions we asked our survey respondents around mobile is, what are your biggest concerns about mobile devices? And the majority said the security of my agency's data is the top one, with the security of devices the second biggest concern for them. From your perspective over at CBP, how are you guys dealing with mobile computing right now and mobile devices, and what are your biggest concerns?
Obviously, security is the key concern for us right now with our mobile devices. The types of devices that we use for our mobility, we're trying to structure in a way that allows us to manage and secure them. We're using, mobile device management tools, mobile application management tools, and capabilities that offer us not just the security, but the ability to remotely wipe the device, to track the device, and to ensure that we don't have any data at rest issues sitting out there. So there's more that needs to be done in this area, not just from CBP's perspective, but from the marketplace. And so we've been trying to work with the providers and also the department to try to push those capabilities along. Some of our applications really have to have the full functionality of the device in order to be effective. So I may need to be able to attach, say, a fingerprint reader to the device or a license plate scanner to the device. And that means that in some cases, I may have to have data on that device. So trying to extend those capabilities to make sure that we can secure the data at rest and then provide update and patching to those devices real time. Those are real key for us, and that's just work in progress. It's not done, but you know we're moving along.
And how much extra challenges do you have because you are in the process of moving from a mainframe environment to a new architecture? Does that affect also your ability to go mobile?
No, not so much. We've been able to work around the mainframe issue with respect to the mobile piece. We do have a lot of data in our data warehouse, so data for querying is easily available for our officers and agents. It's the updating back to the primary databases that's been a little bit slow. One of the things that we've done, though, is we have standardized around the code that we use. It essentially allows us to write code once, and it will work in iOS or Android or any of the operating systems that are out there. And that's been a real saver for us.
I can imagine so, because then you're not worrying about, do we have to test it here and test it there and test it 18 different ways, all the different versions that come out. You know, you got this working for the iPhone 5 up, and there's the iPhone 6, or the Samsung, releases their new Knox version, and you're dealing with that. That must be a huge benefit. I mean, are you guys able to get new apps out or new mobile apps out, or at least have data available? Is the time from release to availability to the people in the field fairly quick? Not necessarily the newest and latest versions, but at least the application piece that people care most about.
I believe our metric is that we have to have it out within 45 days of going to the new operating system. So, you know, most of these mobile apps, they're not huge, because a lot of them are still leveraging the back-end language that's written in the main system. So much of it is kind of form and content piece, and then extending whatever devices get added to that mobile device. Like I said earlier, a license plate reader, a passport reader, those kind of things.
Another big issue around mobility is BYOD, bring your own device. And interesting, when we ask that question of how soon or as a CIO are you going to let your agency do BYOD, 33% said soon and 33% said never. Where are you guys and CBP around BYOD? Maybe not for everyone, but maybe for some people. What's your take?
I think definitely there's a room for BYOD in the federal government space. At CBP, we're not looking to go to BYOD, and mainly that's because we're a law enforcement agency. If anything on that device goes to discovery, the whole device becomes discoverable. Just from an employee standpoint, I don't think employees want their personal data being discovered as part of any kind of court process.
So in many ways, it makes your life a little bit easier. So when people start asking for BYOD, you have a very fair, simple answer to them, which is okay, but you could open yourself up to maybe your own data being part of that discovery process.
Right. Now, as time evolves and maybe laws are kind of enacted to deal with that, to segment what's discoverable versus what's not, and or maybe some testing out in the court system, you know, then we may be able to head down that path. But for right now, we're not looking to go there. The other thing that I think plays into this aspect, extremely important, you know, a lot of our officers and agents are out there in pretty rugged terrain. You know, you got Border Patrol agents climbing around in mountainous desert, pretty desolate areas, and they're pretty hard on these devices. So I doubt that, you know, somebody's going to want to be replacing their personal device every 4 to 6 months because they had to, you know, jump into a river or something like that. So that's also kind of a gating factor for us.
All right, well, let's take a quick break. We come back, we'll wrap up our conversation today with Charlie Armstrong on the Federal News Radio CIO Survey. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. My guest is Charlie Armstrong, the Customs and Border Protection Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. This is a special edition of Ask the CIO. My guest is Charlie Armstrong, the Customs and Border Protection Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller. Today, we're talking about the Federal News Radio CIO survey. And Charlie, one question we asked in that survey was about innovation. Initiatives such as GSA's 18F or OMB's Digital Services Team or HHS's Buyers Club, and how they're kind of changing the way the government looks at innovation. And what's fascinating about this, we asked, agree or disagree, these examples will change how the government looks at and uses innovative approaches in government. And 50% said they agreed with it, and 50% said they disagreed with it. And then the other question we also asked about innovation is for consistent innovation to occur around federal IT CIOs need. And interestingly enough, two things came to the forefront: a better trained or skilled workforce, and actually some top cover from OMB to protect against criticism from auditors and lawmakers. I thought both of those were very interesting answers. From your perspective at CBP, how are you guys encouraging innovation?
Our deputy commissioner is really pushing innovation across CBP. And our shop, the IT shop, and our chief acquisition executive, Mark Borkowski, have partnered together to try to come up with ways of bringing more and more innovation into CBP, not just from the technology standpoint, but also from how we operate. So our leadership is keen on this, and we're still in the kind of early phase of figuring out how we're going to be more innovative, how we're going to maybe leverage more of that thought process around where to take things next, not just from our internal workforce, but from the larger community. We've been partnering already with Science and Technology, the directorate within DHS, on modeling how we might approach doing exit processing, looking at different types of biometrics, facial recognition, iris recognition, in order to keep the flow of people moving along, but also be able to kind of help us get that exit mission done. So as more and more devices get added out there, additional sensors on our networks, we want to be able to kind of leverage that data in different ways to improve the flow, help find that one needle in a haystack, as I talked about earlier, much better. So, you know, if you kind of look at where the industry is going, there's a lot more around crowdsourcing now and trying to figure out what is the best way to get things done. We certainly have an opportunity in that we've got a lot of millennials coming into the workforce now, know how to operate in a different environment than maybe the baby boomers like me were used to. So I think the thought process and the organizational change management around that is working in our favor. That said, we still have a challenge around, you know, we have a finite set of people to look at these different technologies and innovations and trying to help figure out what are the right ones, right? There's thousands of ways you can go out there and trying to hone it down to those, what are those two or three things that are really the big game changers for you? I think those are going to be key for us in the future. Also, you know, the industry's headed more towards this use of excess capacity. You know, if you look at what's going on in the commercial space today with Uber and Airbnb and those kind of things, they're really kind of leveraging where excess capacity exists to help either drive down cost or bring a new service to the market that wasn't there before. And I think those are the kinds of things that'll be key to us in the future.
When you talk about the work you're doing with Mark Borkowski, and let me just say, if you've not heard Mark speak in public, he's a tremendous speaker. He's a really smart guy, and he must have the thickest skin in government because he had to deal with some of the biggest challenges that CBP has had to deal with over the last decade, including SBINet, which I know, Charlie, we could spend the whole time on just that one subject. But what's the timeline about bringing innovation to CBP? Are you guys coming up with a strategy? Are you guys coming up with what to bring that idea of innovation and innovative processes and technologies to CBP?
Over the summer, Mark's staff and my staff worked together to come up with a proposal. We presented that to our deputy commissioner and the leadership within the agency. We did that about a month ago. Plan is to get back together now that we've presented what some options and opportunities would be for us on trying to bring in some more innovation. We're going to get back together hopefully in the next month or two and have kind of a high-level discussion about what that process looks like and how we want to move forward. I will say that your comment earlier is well taken about the risk around this, right? So typically in the government, there's very little room for risk. Nobody wants to fail at anything. But really, in order to get to true innovation, you've got to allow people to try things and fail. And just like we talk about in our agile environment, the idea, though, is to try something, do it quick, and either fail early or succeed early. And if you fail, figure out what do you need to adjust to move on and get it right. So I think that some of that mentality needs to change, as you said earlier. I'm not sure whether that'll happen in my tenure, but certainly it needs to change in order to really, really get the government back out on the innovation curve.
All right, very nice. I know we're almost out of time. Before I let you go, we always ask about the state of the government IT. And from your perspective, where you sit as CBP, and where do you see the role of the CIO changing over the next, you know, 2, 3, 5 years?
Well, I think it's going to be an exciting time for CIOs because with the changes that are happening in the marketplace, the explosion of data that's out there, you know, a lot of the work that we used to do is becoming simpler. But the fact that we're dealing with more and more data from different data sources and very different ways of getting services, that's the complex part. So I think CIOs in the future are really going to have to pay more attention to how they source things. You know, it's not going to be the same old way that we've done contracting in the past. It's going to be a new, different approach to things. dealing with a newer workforce in terms of, you know, these young folks that grew up with smart devices in their hands and know how to do that stuff just like it's second nature to them. I really think that there's going to be great opportunities for the government to move forward in the future. And I think it's going to provide a much better service to the American public.
Very nice, Charlie Armstrong. You are the Chief Information Officer at the Customs and Border Protection Directorate of the Homeland Security Department. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today.
Jason, as always, it's a pleasure.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.